This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 46. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes that Rob's made. What's going on this week?
Nice. Well, sir, as you know, last week was MicroConf, and I have seriously been in, like, recovery since then. It's been 7 days since the second day of MicroConf was. And on Wednesday morning, you were on a plane to the Bahamas, and I felt like emotionally just ravaged. Like, I was walking around Vegas. I went to the Wynn and I sat in front of the waterfall for 2 hours and I drank like Pepsi or Coke for 2 hours. And I don't drink much caffeine. It was this bizarre, surreal landscape, and I was completely unable to talk to people. Like, I was so out of it, dude. So I don't know. It was like coming out of a war zone or something. I felt like I had PTSD. I was just shocked and like all out of it. And then I flew home and I went to sleep early and I slept until noon on Thursday and I didn't open my laptop. So I don't know if I like started getting sick or what the deal was, but then I barely opened I didn't check email at all that day. And then when Friday came, that's just when I started feeling kind of normal again. It was 3 days later. So, and then I'm just now getting back out from under the email. I had 200 some emails that I hadn't answered. So it was good. And obviously today the whole show is about MicroConf. So we'll get into more details about that, but I'm sure people want to hear what you did. You flew out Tuesday night from Vegas for MicroConf. What adventures did you embark on?
Well, I caught a cab back to the airport with Andrew Warner because he had to fly out as well. And Andrew and I stopped at one of the places inside of the airport just to get a drink. And it was a little disappointing. I found out that the U.S. Airways Airport Club had shut down like the previous year or 2 years ago or something like that in the Vegas airport. So they don't have an airport club there anymore, which sort of sucks, but it wasn't really that big a deal because there was a little bar there and we just hung out there for about an hour or so. And funny enough, there was another entrepreneur who had flown in from the Boston area. And he was actually on the same flight that I was with his wife, and he sat down with us and was just talking a little bit about MicroConf and giving us some feedback and stuff like that. So it was cool, though.
That is cool.
So got the red eye back, and I got upgraded to first class, which was very nice. And Ruben's still, I think, a little upset at me over that.
Yeah, you got upgraded both ways. Well, I'm a little upset at you about that, man. Yeah. It's great.
Oh, it gets better because, as you know, I took a flight down to the Bahamas the very next day on Thursday morning. I had to get on a flight at like 7 a.m. With my wife my schedule just kind of worked out that way. And of the three out of the four flights that I had to get down to the Bahamas and back, both my wife and I got upgraded.
Congratulations. Well, that's cool. Well, at least we're traveling in style.
I know.
I know that MicroConf must have taken something out of you, so it was nice to be able to kind of chill on the plane, I imagine.
The flight back kind of sucked. I mean, to be perfectly honest, it's not like you can really lay down in first class either. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's certainly better than flying in coach and, you know, on the red eye, but you still just don't get any sleep. But down to the Bahamas, I mean, that was going there for a vacation. So I kind of needed that. I hadn't really taken a good vacation in probably a good year and a half or so.
Yeah, you're not a big vacationer.
No, but I think that's going to change.
Cool. No, that's good.
Met up with some friends of mine who flew in from Switzerland while we were down in the Bahamas. There were five couples who went, and one was in from Switzerland. And one of them reminded me that I can use my Marriott Rewards points down in the Cayman Islands. Hmm. And I checked it out, and I have plenty enough points to stay there for a full week for free.
Nice.
I was like, that is awesome. So I'd have to pay for the flight down, but that's no big deal.
Cool. Well, I look forward to a Micropreneur Academy retreat where you take me down there. On your points. That'll be fantastic.
Sure. You can sleep at the foot of the bed. Keep my toes warm.
So, dude, let's talk about MicroConf. This could be like a two-hour podcast, so we need to somehow limit it. But where do we start with this to try to give people an idea? I guess there's going to be two audiences, right? There's going to be people who listen to this who are at MicroConf and some who are not. So we can cover things that are interesting to both of them.
I just don't even know where to start. I mean, as you said, it was kind of emotionally and mentally draining, but it was just nonstop the whole time. I mean, we started at...
Sunday afternoon at like 5 p.m.
Yeah.
It's when we, so to give listeners an idea, Mike and I went, met a bunch of speakers down in the lobby of the hotel, and then we took them to a speaker's dinner at the Wynn at a nice Italian restaurant there called Strata, which was cool. So it was basically, you know, it was Andrew Warner from Mixer G, it was myself and Mike, and then Sean Ellis and Marcus McConnell, Noah Kagan, Ramit Sethi, and Justin Vincent from Texing, and then Todd Garland from Buy Sell Ads. Patrick McKenzie, most people know from Bingo Card Creator, and Heaton Shaw. And then there were actually two others, huh? Cause, Justin brought Jason from
Jason,
Texas.
Yep.
Ruben, we invited Ruben cause he had helped a lot with a bunch of the, you know, some of the conference organization stuff getting speed. Mm-hmm. So that was nice. It was like 13 of us, and I thought that was pretty fun. Although it was a bit, so for me, it was a bit, I really enjoyed it, but it was like stressful, right? Cause it's the first time I met almost all those people in person. And
right.
We've been emailing with them and organizing things. And it was just like, wow, to see Andrew Warner sitting on the left and Noah Kagan, you know, sitting on the left. And there were just a lot of big names, and they're intense. These are like super successful entrepreneurs, and they just have intense personalities, and they ask, they don't make small talk, is what I realized. Right?
Yeah. They ask some very blunt questions. I mean, especially Andrew. I mean, he was just, some of the questions he asked were of Justin Vincent were just, you know, dead on. I mean, he didn't beat around the bush at all, you know, when he was asking about his podcast and what he does and this and that. It's just very straight to the point. They just don't mess around. I mean, I felt like such an amateur sitting next to him, to be honest.
Me too. Yeah. And Ramit and Heaton know each other really well. And so they were going back and forth about conversion rates. And then Noah would jump in and they'd talk about whose site converts better. And then someone would mention a technique and the other people would like note it. And they're like, oh, I'm totally going to do that next week. And I was gleaning all this stuff. Someone's like, yeah, this increased my conversion rate like 10% to do this thing. And we're all like, oh, totally. You know, and then everyone gets their phones out and starts typing stuff. It was just a crazy knowledge. Like, what a mastermind group, you know? That'd be insane to be in that group.
I don't know. I mean, it was honestly a little difficult keeping up, but I mean, I was in this kind of a similar position that you were where I'd never met most of these people, you know, at least you'd talk to them on the phone or converse through email. I mean, for me, it was just kind of, hey, this is Mike Tabor. And, you know, I don't know whether they were looking at say, okay, who is Mike Tabor? But
right. So that was an experience. And then I had to rush back. I left early actually. And you picked up the tab. Thank you, Mike. I headed back to the welcome reception Sunday night, and I think we had around 100 people there. It was almost, no, it wasn't 100, was it? It was somewhere in the 70s, 70 or 80 people in this small pub in the hotel. And I thought that was awesome. That was such a great way to kick it off, right? Everyone just kind of coming in with their badges. So you start learning people's names. And I was shocked at how many people's names I recognized, whether it's from people who've commented on the podcast, sent in comments from, you know, my blog comments, the Academy bought my book. I mean, just somewhere at some point I had somehow touched so many of those people. And it was really cool to meet everybody. And of course, there's always a comment. It's like, oh, you're taller than I thought you'd be. You know, I got that a lot because I'm tall and skinny. So.
Right. Yeah. When I was talking to the guys who were, who we'd gotten to run the registration area, I went down there and I forget whether it was the next morning or that night, but I checked to see the number of people who had actually registered, and it was, I don't know, it was probably about 80 people had registered.
Okay. So we assume most of them would come, and we kind of packed, I mean, we could have fit more people in the pub, but we packed it out pretty good that night. It was really loud and stuff.
Definitely we contributed to the pub's bottom line that night and the next.
Seriously. I was really happy that there were so many groups of people just getting into it, like entrepreneurs who'd shown up for this thing that didn't know each other. They would just sit down at tables and start chatting. And then before, you know, you come back 10 minutes later and they're talking like hardcore business. And one guy's like, well, I'm thinking about launching this. What do you guys think? And like getting feedback from people. It was awesome. I was totally impressed with the kind of the level of comfort that people achieved so quickly.
Yeah, I was too. And I think one of the reasons for that, and I was listening to the Texing podcast a couple of days ago, how they had been talking about this new idea that they have for a website that kind of puts people who are programmers together with people who need programmers. And they apparently have been talking about this idea they've had for a couple of years now, and nobody has stolen it. And one of the things that they put out there was the fact that if you already have an idea and you're capable of doing it, then chances are you're not going to steal somebody else's ideas, not because other people don't have good ideas or you think that your ideas are better. It's just that you're not as, you know, invested in them. And I think the same thing just kind of held true. And maybe it's more of a subconscious thing when you get into an environment like that, because everyone was more than happy to talk about their own ideas and what they're working on, because everybody was working on something. Everybody had an idea for something. I mean, it was just crazy the amount of, you know, I guess mental energy that was there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I felt. And so we stayed out till 1 a.m. Sunday night, and then the conference started early the next morning. I think you and I were down there by 7.
Right.
And I thought, I was concerned there would be logistical issues, right? I mean, with so many moving parts, that was my biggest fear going into it, is that we had forgotten something, something would break down, there would be no food, or, you know, just some lame thing like that would be a catastrophe. And there wasn't one single major issue. I thought there wasn't a single thing that failed that I would call catastrophic. In fact, I can't even think of any. Can you think of any minor failures?
The speaker dropping out at the last minute, but
Yeah, that was a bummer. So yeah, David Hauser had to fly back. He had an emergency. He apologized. It was, you know, a bummer, but that was actually fortuitous. I mean, if you think about
it. In a way, yeah.
That was one of the things that I would change. You know, if we decide to do it again next year, which we haven't decided yet. Maybe you've decided, but I definitely have not. I think that's one thing I would change next year, is to not have. We had 12 speakers scheduled, so it was 6 per day, 1 hour talks each. And that's just too damn much talking, right? It's just too long to sit and listen to people. So I think that's one thing that I have I have a notebook where I keep my, you know, ideas, and I have ideas for next year of what I would change. And I think I would only have 8 to 10 speakers, fly in fewer, and do more of those, what Ramit called teardowns. But basically they're just, you know, you bring up your website and then the speakers critique it, and they offer you advice and they offer you suggestions, things that they think are wrong with it. And so we did that in place of David Hauser's talk, and it worked out really well. It was one of the better parts of the conference, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was really cool to see that stuff on the fly, because none of it was scripted. I mean, and not that, you know, most of the conference was scripted anyway, but, you know, people have their talks and they know what they're going to say and generally talk about. But with those teardowns, I mean, people would just call out a URL, we type it in and bring it up, and people would look at it for 10 or 15 seconds and then just start going on about, you know, things that people should think about or what they would do or what they like, what they didn't like. And that was really, really cool to watch.
Right. So Ramit did about 30 minutes, and that was all planned in advance. But then Patrick McKenzie and Heaton Shaw volunteered to do it for another, I think they did about 30 to 40 minutes. And that was also really cool. So I think next year, if we decide to do it, I do fewer speakers, and I'd break up the day and think about doing like 2 30-minute teardown sessions per day, like mid-morning and mid-afternoon. I think it gets people engaged. People are yelling out the URLs. It really just, you know, kind of breaks up the monotony of speaking.
Yeah, and I think that if we kind of concentrate on the attendees' websites, that certainly helps with engagement as well, because then you're seeing not only what other people are working on, because you don't get to talk to everybody. I mean, I feel like I probably talked to at least 95% of the people there. I didn't talk to everybody, but yeah, it was pretty darn close. I mean, I made a conscious effort to try and get around to talk to just about everybody. And there were like 2 or 3 guys that I literally met 5 minutes before I had to leave. So I'm sure that there was a few people that I missed that I didn't get a chance to talk to. But
yeah,
I mean, I think that other people would probably have a hard time, because most other people that were there were, you know, involved in their little groups and talking about their ideas and listening to what other people's ideas were, but they weren't necessarily going around and hopping from group to group to get in on all the different conversations like you and I were.
Right. Yeah, that's true. We were pretty deliberate about that. I think hosting the conference, we really wanted to mingle, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So, I mean, I wasn't necessarily there for as much of the conversations as I would have liked, but, you know, it is what it is. You got to, you know, do your best to make sure that you're talking to everybody as well.
Right, right. So, in terms of, so then there were 6 speakers on Monday, and then we had again a reception at night where we went back to the pub, and I think I only stayed out till 11 or 12 that night, just because I was starting to get tired. And then we had the second day of speakers, and people started flying out Tuesday night, and you flew out as well, although that night people stayed out pretty. We stayed out till 3 that night.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Yeah, because it was kind of the last day and people were leaving early in the morning. There were people, like, several people had to get up at 5 in the morning and they were out till 3
yeah.
with us, you know. But it was really cool. Andrew Warner, well, so we had been comped a couple of, like, suites based on, you know, booking enough rooms in the hotel as a conference. And so they upgraded they gave us like 5 or 6 upgrades. And so, you know, you and I were able to choose who got the upgrades. And so we gave Andrew Warner we got one penthouse suite that was like on the top floor and was massive. That thing was like, I don't even know. It was like 1,000 square feet, 1,500 square feet. I mean, it was just this huge area, totally fit for a party. And so he just basically left me the key and we hung out talked and, you know, had some drinks and stuff. That was cool. And actually, that's one thing I'd do differently again next year is I think one of you or I should take the penthouse suite because I think it would be really cool to do that more than one night. I felt like it was just a private feel. The welcome reception in a room like that would be really cool, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with that.
And I felt like it was more intimate. I also feel, you know, you made a comment late. It was right before you left, I think. You said, if we do this again next year, we're limiting the number of tickets. Like, we're going to keep this a small conference and not try to grow it. And I thought that was it. The more people I talked to, the more people were like, you should, like, don't let it go above 125 is what a couple people told me. Because the conference, yours in my vision, I think, early on was like, oh, let's try to make it like Business of Software or another conference, you know, like that. And they're like 225. They were 225 last year, and they're looking to go over 300 this year. Mm-hmm. And so I think in my head, we originally wanted, at least I wanted that many people, but, it wound up being 105, 110, which for me was like, oh, it's not going to be big enough, blah, blah, blah. But the feedback I got was like, no, this is way better to do it this way.
Yeah. And I forget who it was. Somebody had been talking to me about that and had said that there were some studies done that basically said that a good conference size to like make it smaller and more intimate or make it feel that way. If you go above 150, I think the number was, or maybe it was 175, but the higher you go, the less personal it feels.
Yeah.
So people tend to spread out a little bit more. They don't necessarily talk to one another as much. And I didn't see that at all at this conference. I mean,
yeah.
It was just amazing how quickly people just kind of got into it. And it was just, you know, hi, I'm so-and-so. You know, it's just immediately people introducing themselves.
Yep. Yeah, so I agree. To me, after doing it this year, 175 sounds like way too many. You know, and
yeah.
I don't know if my mind is just clouded because it was such a good feel, but like 150 even sounds like too many, but I could be convinced otherwise. It feels like 125 might be, cause that would still have fit in that room that we had. Like we could have fit 125 there.
Right. So. But that honestly kind of scares me a little bit because, I made it a point afterwards to tell people, hey, I'm going to be sending out surveys. Please make sure you answer them, fill out all the comments. And, you know, comments are very important. You know, check boxes are nice, but we'd like people to fill out actual comments.
Yep, right.
Well, one of the questions that I asked virtually everybody that I ran into on the second day was, you know, would you pay to come back to MicroConf next year if we decided to do it again? And I specifically phrased it that way because I didn't necessarily want people to say, yes, I will come back contingent on X or, you know, if I get a free ticket or if I get a reduced ticket.
Sure.
Or it's like, I basically wanted to know, did you find this worthwhile enough that you would pay money to come again? And without fail, every single person said yes. And some of them said, I would pay any amount of money to come back.
That's
like
cool.
Somebody actually said that. It's like, I would pay any amount of money if no matter what you charge, you could charge a couple thousand dollars and I would come back.
Yeah, I got a couple of those where it's like, someone said you should keep the price where it is or raise it because I want to keep the quality of the attendees high. Which I thought was interesting because I wouldn't think to do that. We got enough complaints about it being, well, I guess we only got a handful about it being too expensive, but I would think that if we could, we'd lower it, but maybe not. Maybe that's not a good thing, you know?
Yeah. You know, I wonder about that as well, because if you raise the price, you're essentially setting a quality bar that, you know, people are going to put an emphasis on, you know, making sure that they get something out of it. And, you know, the people who are kind of on the fence, you know, aren't really necessarily committed. I mean, we run into that with the Academy where, you know, that's part of why we charge is because if you're going to invest your time and effort into, you know, pursuing an entrepreneurial business, you know, we want to make sure that you're actually going to invest the time and effort into it as opposed to just joining this, you know, quote unquote club or this community where there's no real obligation. You don't really have any skin in the game.
Right.
And I think that by having a slightly higher price, that forces people to say, you know, is this something I'm willing to commit to or is it not? And if the conference is only a couple hundred dollars or $200, it's like, you know, that's not too big a deal. I mean, there's people who will blow that on a Friday night going out drinking.
Right, right. Yeah, I think we need to be careful not to, I mean, you know, our idea was to make it a solid conference that's a lot cheaper than Business of Software, or at least that was my thought originally, right, is that there are people who can't afford the $2,000 for it, and let's keep it reasonable. But, right, you know, at the $500 or $600 price point, I certainly think, I feel like that's at least reasonable for the attendees, you know, who attended this year. Yeah, I don't think going down to $100 or $200 would be a good idea. But
no,
if we could pull $100 or $200 off the price we had this year, I would consider it. I think, but although, like, I had a couple requests, you know, mentioning like, oh, I would like to do it at a nicer hotel, because we did it at the Riviera in Las Vegas, which, you know, it was doable. We were bootstrapping a conference, but it's definitely not on the nicer end of hotels that we could have done it at.
Right.
And that was purely a financial decision, right? You and I were on the hook for a lot of money to do this thing anyways, and so we were just trying to hedge our bet there.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to do it at a nicer hotel.
I heard the same thing from people. They said I would pay more if it was in a nicer hotel.
Yep. Yeah, I heard that as well. So I didn't hear any complaints about, oh, it's a crappy hotel, but it was just kind of like, you know what? It'd be nicer to kind of upgrade. So
I heard several people moved their hotel rooms though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I heard it wasn't very many. It was like two or three.
Interesting. But I wonder if they got the renovated rooms at the Riviera were nice.
Oh, they got the renovated rooms.
And they still moved them? Wow.
Interesting. I asked.
Because I thought they were quite nice, frankly. I thought the rooms were well done. But anyways.
I think one of them just ended up with like bad neighbors.
I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah, what the other one was.
Oh, they just moved their rooms within the hotel.
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. They didn't like move to another hotel.
No.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. You know, one other thing I would do, we didn't have budget for like a videographer, because it was like $5,000 to get someone to record it and edit it. And, you know, we essentially, I asked Ruben and he did some, I bought a tabletop tripod and he used my HD cam and that worked out okay. Like we got some video of the second day. The first day is kind of a wash because of some technical issues, but I would really like to do that next year if it isn't so, you know, if it isn't cost prohibitive, because I would love to have some really nice produced footage of our talks, of all the talks.
Yep.
What was the other thing? Oh, you know what? It would have been cool. I know we didn't want to do shirts because we didn't want to do 100 shirts because people throw them away and it creates waste. I mean, we're trying to be, you know, green and such. It would have been cool though to have like a dozen or two dozen to kind of give away for different things, right? Like some kind of prizes for asking questions or something like that, just to have something to take home. And I think only printing one or two dozen would actually make them like even more kind of more valuable.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking that as well. Cause it was nice to be, cause, one of our sponsors, Pluralsight, or no, was it Pluralsight? Yeah, it was Pluralsight, had sent us some t-shirts and, I handed a bunch of them out, you know, as prizes. And there weren't that many. I mean, I only had like 8 or 10 of them or something like that.
Right.
You know, two people actually fought over who's going to get the large versus the extra, extra large or whatever.
Yeah. And Microsoft brought a bunch of t-shirts too, which was cool.
Yep.
That was neat.
Yep.
I got one of those.
Yeah, I did too.
So what else? What did you think about the talks? I guess like what, are there maybe a couple talks that really stood out to you that might be interesting to the listeners?
Ramit's, I would say, stood out to me, I think, the most.
Fantastic. Yeah, listeners, if you haven't heard of Ramit Sethi, he's at iwillteachyoutoberich.com. And he works in, it's basically like personal finance. He's written a book. He has a New York Times bestselling book. Very good speaker. And he agreed to come to speak at MicroConf. I mean, it was kind of a favor. We're an upstart. And he's frankly a bigger name than, you know, I thought we could land. But at the last minute, he decided to do it, which was really cool. And what did you like about his talk?
It was just the way he presented everything, that, you know, where he had all the stuff, there was where he was showing all this data behind the decisions and the psychology behind you know, the decisions that we make. It was just very, very interesting and eye opening. It wasn't something that I guess I'd really, I guess it was kind of on the subconscious. I'd thought about it before, but not really thought about it, you know.
Yeah, I liked that. It was about behavioral change, right? And it was like talking about humans, like, don't update your headline to don't do micro testing. He was saying, don't do split testing. You really want to get in the psyche of your kind of who you're selling to and look at what they really need, you know, and figure out what they need. And it's not to trick them. It's to actually figure out if they need your software, then you're really talking to that person, in your marketing efforts. So that was cool. And then what was neat, of course, is several other speakers, including myself, John Ellis, I think Heaton all talked about split testing. You know, you should split test. You should A/B test. So it's always good to hear, you know, the different points of view.
Well, I don't think that Ramit came out and said you shouldn't ever do it. I think it was more of a don't think that split testing is the end all be all, because of course it's going to show you that, you know, test A may be better than test B and vice versa. But the problem is that 6 months later, those tests may be completely invalid, and there are a lot of other things that can contribute.
Right.
And I think that was kind of the point he was trying to make, not necessarily that A/B testing is wrong. It's
right.
Just that it's a different mechanism for doing things, and there are other things that could potentially have a higher impact or higher reward.
Got it. Yep. No, that's a good summary of it. Cool. Anyone else? Noah, you like Noah's talk?
Noah's
energetic.
Talk.
Yeah. Noah Kagan from AppSumo.
Yeah, Noah's talk was entertaining. Not least of which was because the hot sauce was flying fast and furious. For the listeners who weren't there, Noah did a presentation, and what did he call it? It was I will blow your mind with hot sauce, or something like
how to blow up your business with hot sauce, or blow your mind with hot sauce, or something like that. It was just about being more productive and more energized and.
Right.
But
what he did was throughout the course of his presentation, he wanted people to kind of get into it. So what he would do is he would reward people for laughing at his jokes or being enthusiastic by taking hot sauce and giving them a bottle of hot sauce. And these weren't small bottles of hot sauce either. What were they like? They had to be at least 16 ounces.
Yeah,
maybe
they were.
24,
yep.
30, 32.
They were like two.
I mean, there was huge bottles, and I just remember thinking that it was I was sitting in the back row, and Ramit was sitting at the far end, also in the back row, and I think Ramit had asked him a question, and so Noah just decided, hey, well, you're getting a bottle of hot sauce, and he launched it all the way across, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, oh no,
this cannot end up well. I
this
agree.
Cannot go well.
I felt the same way, because the bottles were all jacked up. It's like they'd melted, so like the caps were on sideways, and I remember thinking midair, this thing's gonna blow up and like spray hot sauce all over everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't. He caught it.
He caught it, and it like ended up bouncing out of his hands and hit the floor anyway, and it did open up.
Oh, did it? I didn't know.
Yeah,
that. Okay,
that one did. Yep. And then there was another one that got tossed back towards the stage, and that one exploded as well. That one was bad.
That one, I went up on the stage and up on the wall, and the walls were canvas, and I was concerned that we were going to get charged for cleaning it up. But as it turns out, hot sauce is water soluble, so they just kind of sprayed Windex on it, and it came off. So it was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Dodged a bullet there. Yeah, that was one of the more exciting moments. I actually have some video footage of that, but you can't see it explode. You just see Noah's reaction. And he's like, you see him jump, and he's like, what was that? Like, and he said, are you mad at me? Because someone was trying to throw it. They were kind of trying to throw it back up on the stage. They didn't mean for it to explode. And I think it was more of a joke or, I don't know. And it just, but it like hit something accidentally and exploded. So it was a funny scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was entertaining.
Yeah. So you had mentioned before we started talking, you mentioned we got some compliments on the registration desk workers because we had there. And now explain a little bit about how you pulled that off.
Oh, this was so last minute. It wasn't even funny. I was trying to find somebody or an organization in Las Vegas who was willing to, you know, come and man the registration desk, because we weren't real sure exactly what we needed, and we kind of thought about it and talked a little bit about it and said, okay, well, we probably only need people to, you know, be there for the registration desk from maybe 5 to 10 on Sunday and then maybe 7 to noon on Tuesday. So for about 10 hours. But we figured we needed at least two people. But we also needed to have these people help us out with the badges and, you know, stuff the badges and the schedules into the badge holders, and then also to load all of the USB pens. And one of the things we did, we basically went all digital for this conference. Instead of handing out flyers and pages of marketing collateral from all the different sponsors, basically what we did was we took everything and we said, hey, give it to us in a digital format. We'll put it on the USB drives. And somebody else I was talking to about that was really kind of amazed at that, because what doing that allowed us to do was it allowed us to hand out videos and, you know, audio from the sponsors and, you know, basically any sort of PDF, any, you know, Word documents, case studies, you name it. As long as it's in digital format, it could go on there. And let's be honest, what at this point is not, you know, in digital first that you then later print. So that worked out really well, but the issue was that a week before the conference, you know, we still didn't have somebody to man the registration desk. So I'm sitting there thinking to myself, oh, great, we're going to have to go to, you know, some local company. We're going to have to pay them, you know, $60, $70 an hour for people to sit there. And it was, you know, we had budget for it, but I just didn't really want to pay that much money for somebody to sit there at a registration desk. So what I did was I contacted, I'm a Phi Delta Theta alumni. So what I did was I contacted, the Phi Delta Theta chapter at UNLV and asked them, is there anybody there who'd be willing to work the conference? And I talked to the vice president. He said, I'll hook you up. Don't worry about it. I'll find the best people I can find, and I'll make sure that they're not screw-ups. So he hooked us up with three people to work at the registration desk, and, you know, they were absolutely top-notch. I actually got compliments from people about how professional they were, even though they didn't necessarily know anything about what we were doing.
Yeah, I was impressed when they showed up, and they just seemed to know what they were doing. And we left both of our laptops with them, right? And they're loading the USB pens. And obviously that's not something I like doing with people I just met, but they seem to do everything right. There were a lot of steps involved, and it was cool. So if anyone out there organizing a conference, college kids are great. I mean, it worked out really well for us. So,
well, I don't know about any college kids.
Sure.
I mean,
that's true.
The fact is that, you know, I'm in the same fraternity as these guys, and they, you know, we're, I just happen to be an alumni from a different chapter. I'm from, you know, the Rochester Institute of Technology, and they go to the, you know, UNLV. But it was nice being able to just reach out to them and have things in common with them. And I think that certainly helped.
Yeah, definitely. And they were, realistically, they were handpicked, right? Essentially the VP or whatever handpicked them for us. So I think that really helped.
Yep.
Because they were cool and they got the job done. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, the logistics, man, we talked about it on the podcast before. I mean, it was so much, there were so many little things that could have gone wrong and so much planning that went into place that I was really surprised. All the food was fine. I mean, it was good. You know, it wasn't like fantastic, but it was definitely like when I ate it, I was like, oh, this is good food. And I just had no idea. I mean, it's not like we even visited the site before we booked this thing. So I was happy that it was, you know, that the room was as nice as it was, and that, I don't know, just that kind of the logistics panned out well, because I could see things, you know, you could imagine not seeing a space that things could have gone much worse than they did.
Yeah, somebody had asked me about that, if we had done a site visit and this and that. I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
It was all pretty well blind. I mean, we relied on other people's opinions to kind of get us what we needed and give us advice, and, you know, everyone came through, I think.
Yeah, that was cool. I have a question for you, because I was just kind of thinking about this yesterday as I was making some notes. I would prefer, like, all things being equal, I would prefer not to do it in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I would just prefer to do it in Portland or San Francisco, or we could. Boston was like three times as expensive, so I don't think that's an option. And I bet San Francisco is three times as expensive too. But when we were in Vegas, I had a couple people tell me that they were not going to go, and then when they found out it was in Vegas, they decided to go because they figured they could turn it into a vacation.
I heard that from a lot of people.
That was surprising to me, because I've been to Vegas a ton of times. My grandma used to live there. And so I don't see it as this fun place to go anymore, but I guess.
Well, it's because you were going to visit your grandma.
Yeah, no, that's true. Well, and
no offense, but.
No, we would gamble and do all that stuff, but I've been there so much that it just doesn't have, you know, I live an hour plane flight from there. So I've probably been there 30 times in the last 20 years. So it just, I've overdone it at this point. But I heard from enough people that Vegas was a decent location. So I it kind of made me take pause. I guess, you know what we should do? And we should ask it in the survey. We're going to send out that email survey to the attendees and we should ask, you know, if it was a good location or not.
Yeah. I heard the same thing as you did. It was just, it was kind of mind boggling how many people said if it hadn't been in Vegas, I wouldn't have come.
Yeah.
It's just, that really shocked me. It really, really did. I mean, we actually had somebody who flew in from England.
Yeah.
To come. It was, 23 hours of travel time for him to come to this conference.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah. Well, it shouldn't have been that much, but he had a layover or something, right? You should be able to get there in like 13 or something, I guess, with a direct flight. So,
yeah. I don't know how many direct flights there are from, you know,
where he was to Vegas.
Heathrow to,
right?
Yeah. From Heathrow to Vegas. I have no idea. I think the only other thing I would do differently is I would probably practice my speech well in advance instead of practicing it, you know, Monday morning before I have to get up there.
Right. Cause we were so busy with logistics that it's like you almost didn't have time. Luckily, I had already given my talk a couple times at previous conferences, so I didn't really need to, but this was your first time doing this talk. So you actually needed a little more practice on it.
It wasn't really that. It was just the fact that mine had originally been scheduled for Tuesday, not Monday. So I didn't feel like I'd prepared enough.
That's right.
Because I took David Hauser's slot when he had to drop out.
Yep.
So, and then we're like, we'll figure out what to do, you know, for my slot on Tuesday tomorrow.
Right.
Because we found out, what was it? It was like Sunday night.
It was 1 in the morning. Like, 12:30.
12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning when we found out that David wouldn't be able to make it. So.
And he spoke He spoke at 1 the next day or something.
So, I would probably practice in advance just in case that sort of thing came up in advance or came up again. But I don't know. I mean, what did you think of my talk? Was it really – was it obvious that I had not really practiced it very much?
No, it wasn't. I mean, you only had 20 slides, which is – for an hour talk is, not a ton. So I felt like you had practiced it because you had to do a lot of talking rather than having slides prompt you. You know what I'm saying? Because I think I had maybe 80 slides for the same amount of time.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It might have been 60. So I have 125 in the deck, but I have a bunch of them hidden because it's too long at that rate. And I swap them in and out as I change the talk.
I see.
So I don't know exactly how many I actually did, but it was between 60 and 80 definitely. So yeah, I had a lot, 3 to 4 times what you did, which made, and that helps prompt stuff and, you know, helps me keep it moving. So I figured you had practiced it because you didn't need that many slides.
Well, I had practiced it. I mean, I practiced it on the plane because I had 6 hours, to practice. So I practiced it for probably, I'd say 2.5-3 hours or so on the plane before I came out.
Right.
And I'd practiced it a little bit when I was putting everything together. And then, obviously after David had to drop out, then I practiced that morning while some of the other speakers were going.
Right.
So, so it's not like I was totally unprepared. I think it was more of just a mental thing. I felt like I wanted a little bit more time to look at my slides and I didn't necessarily have it.
Sure. Sure. Hey, so I felt like there were two breakout speakers who I think are lesser known in the startup world. And I'd hoped both of them would come through and they did. Todd Garland from Buysell Ads. I thought his talk was fantastic.
Like it was
off the charts and it was just entertaining. It was kind of like everything you'd want, right? It was engaging. It was entertaining. It was educational. It was a great story. So cheers to Todd. And then the other person who I thought did really well, again, not a big name in the startup world, but kind of an underdog who early on I was like, I think he's going to clutch it. You know, I think he's really going to nail this. It was Justin Vincent from Texing. Again, he had a shorter talk. His was 40 minutes. But he nailed it. I really thought he was entertaining and the audience was kind of, quite engaged with it, I thought.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree on both of those.
I think that's something else I would do next year is I wouldn't make all the talks an hour. I actually feel like an hour is
too long.
It is. It is. It's kind of like 40 to 50 minutes, 45 minutes might be the ideal length for almost all the talks. I think if there are a couple people like Noah definitely could have done an hour, Ramit definitely, like no problem. But for most speakers, I think that it's better to have like a 40 or 45 minute talk. I just think it's easier to fill the space, including Q&A. you know?
Yeah, yeah. Make the talk like half an hour and then give 15 minutes for questions.
Yep. So.
Because that was the one thing I noticed, that was that people tended to, I wouldn't say be long-winded, but people tended to talk right up until shortly before their time was up, because everybody had an hour. And then once it got to that point, there wasn't really a lot of time left for questions. It wasn't as if, I think most speakers looked at it and said, well, I've got an hour, so I'll fill close to an hour. And they did, but I feel like there were a lot of questions that people probably wanted to ask, that didn't necessarily get a chance to ask in front of everybody.
Yep.
But at the same time, it was really great to see, in the after hours, you know, evening events that we were doing, that all of the speakers just like mingled with all the attendees.
That was cool.
Really cool. Like,
yep.
I got a number of compliments on that as well. They just said it's really great to see that the speakers are just hanging out with the attendees and asking questions and, you know, providing feedback and all this other stuff.
Yeah, that's, a lot of people told me that, at least 10 or 12, and they said it was great that the speakers were so approachable, and that since the conference was small, they didn't have this mob around them at all times. Because it was like a 10 to 1 ratio, right? It's like there were 12 speakers and 510 attendees. So it actually wasn't outrageous to think that you could talk to every speaker. And a number of people, you know, attendees, who I talked to said they had a conversation with every speaker, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that kind of goes back to the ratio of speakers to attendees more than anything else.
Yep.
So if we cut back on the number of speakers, I don't know, we may need to cut down on the number of attendees.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I don't know.
Well, any other, we're getting long on time here. Any other last minute things we want to throw into this podcast?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Okay. Yeah, I really want to send a thanks out to everyone who attended. Had a great time, and it was awesome to meet so many members of the Micropreneur Academy. There were at least 12, I counted. It might have been 15. And then to meet so many people who listen to the podcast, which again, is just awesome to meet people in person and be able to hear their feedback, positive and negative, as well as just kind of engage and hear more about, you know, their ideas. And it helps us make the podcast better, frankly.
You know, it's funny. I only talked, I distinctly remember one person who mentioned the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but other than that, I don't remember too many people saying, hey, I listened to the podcast, and then talking about it.
Yeah.
I really didn't talk to too many people about it.
Yeah, I had several come up to me.
Oh.
I wonder if you're scary and I'm nice.
Maybe.
So people come up to me. Hey, last question for you actually is, how did it feel to be somewhere where everyone, like 110 people, all know you and they come up to you and ask questions or mention things? You're kind of like, you're famous for like 2 days, you know? How did it feel?
The bizarre isn't quite the right word. It was, and it's not disconcerting either. It's just unfamiliar territory, I'll say. It was really cool, but it felt out of place. I felt out of place at times, because, you know, people would come up to me and they'd say, oh, you know, you emailed me about this. I'm like, and I'm trying to remember, you know, because how many thousands of emails have I sent? And they said, oh, you talked about this, and, you know, go on. And sometimes I remembered and sometimes I didn't.
Yeah.
But it was really cool getting up and just, you know, talking in front of all those people. And, I thought about it after the conference, and it was funny because I got up on stage and I looked out at everybody and I said, wow, I've never actually talked to a room that was this large before.
Yeah. I wished I had taken my camera up there and just taken one, either a pan on video or just a snapshot, just to kind of have for the record, you know,
right,
of how
right.
from the speaker's point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think the most interesting thing to me was that when I got up there and was talking to people, I didn't feel nervous.
Yeah.
Not one bit.
Yeah, it was like a very friendly room, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, most people have, you know, their number one fear is public speaking. And I don't know anyone who's ever died from getting up and speaking in public. But
right.
It's just interesting that, you know, I didn't feel nervous or scared or anything like that. It was just, I got up there and, you know, I mean, maybe part of it had to do with the fact that I was helping at the beginning with the conference and just talking to people. But, you know, I think also it might have had something to do with the fact that talking to everybody, it seemed more like a group of peers than, you know, you're getting up in front of everybody as the expert on X.
Yeah, I can see that.
So it was not like talking to a bunch of friends, but talking to a bunch of people that you were, you know, at least acquaintances with.
Right.
And I think part of that had to do with just the fact that, you know, on Sunday night, we opened up with that social event and we're talking to everybody.
Right.
So, yeah, but that was really cool. I mean, what did you think?
Oh, I enjoyed it. I think I'm like kind of an introvert. And so I, when I go to conferences, if I'm not speaking, I tend to kind of sit in a corner. I'll sit with one or two people and I don't really go out and meet a lot of people. And so this, either being a speaker or running the conference, is an advantage for me because it means I instantly have people coming up to me to say things, and that I like that because it allows me to talk to more people. It forces me to talk to more people, and it means I don't have to initiate myself. You know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. I don't tend to be, it's not in my nature to go out and meet a bunch of people. So I really enjoy it. I really enjoy speaking and just being able to have a common ground to talk to people about. It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I made it a point in college when I was, you know, attending various social events and, you know, running for various student positions, either student government or inside my fraternity, to make it a point to go out and talk to people and be social, because I knew that would be a valuable skill later in life. Because I'm kind of naturally an introvert as well. I don't necessarily go out and draw attention to myself, I'll say.
Well, I think we're running very long on time here, so I just wanted to mention one last thing before we do our outro, and it's about iTunes. We have 37 reviews now, which is cool, and we have one extra comment. I don't know how many comments we have. Does it say? No. We have two pages now, and we just got one on June 12th, so that was a couple days ago, and it's by Carson. It says, I'd given up on podcasts, but had a long drive to vacation ahead of me, so I downloaded a few of these. I enjoyed them so much that I downloaded and listened to every one while on vacation. Really good podcast with solid tips and advice. So thank you, Carson, and we encourage all of our listeners to give us a review and or a comment in iTunes, because it helps us show up higher in the rankings, which brings more listeners and motivates Mike and I to continue doing it.
Thanks to all of our sponsors who either came to MicroConf or were able to support it from afar. We really appreciate it. I think that there's a lot of things that we just wouldn't have been able to do without the sponsors.
I agree. There were some pivotal things that I'm not sure if the conference would have happened without, like, the sponsors. There were a few pivotal speakers that did kind of were a tipping point to make it happen. So I've tended to tell those people, you know, in person, thanking them, saying, like, it wouldn't have happened without you. But yeah, there, it really, an effort like this cannot possibly be done by two guys alone. So I really appreciated everyone coming together for this. So if you have a question or a comment, you can call it in 888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. A full transcript of this podcast is available by public demand at startupsfortherestofus.com. Yeah, you know how we asked if people wanted transcripts? There have been a ton of comments. Like, well, I say a ton. There's probably been three, four, five in the last week since that episode came out.
Asking, really?
Yeah, saying like, no, keep the transcripts. Keep the transcripts.
Really?
So, yeah, so I guess we're going to keep them.
Damn, why don't I get those emails?
because I think there's only one moderator email in WordPress, and so I'm getting it because for some reason these things are kind of being flagged for spam, and I approve them when they come through.
Oh,
so that's the email I get.
That's weird.
Yeah, it is. We got to figure out a way for it not to flag those, because they shouldn't be flagged. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot. It's used under Creative Commons. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.